Go from there. This is your host, Trevante Jaramillo. Finally, after all these years of, you didn't know it was years, but it's been years of, you know, death threats, sexual advances. You're not following me on this?
Oh, no, I'm following. I'm just waiting to see what other adjectives and adverbs you can come up with.
No, there's plenty of time for all that. Yeah. Eric Psychotic Smith. Let's just start, and then I'll go off of what you rattle off right now. Like, tell me all your things you got going on right now.
All of them?
All of them. Start to finish.
Professionally,
I'll cherry pick which ones I want to talk about.
Professionally, what I've been doing the longest, I'm a musician. I've been playing since I was 12 years old. I started out as drums and switched to guitar, and then went back to singing, and then singing and guitar, and then back to drums, and kind of went on tour and did different things like that. I started a record label in 2001, more out of spite for the record industry than anything else. I was
2001.
Irritated.
2001. So, okay, well, you graduated what, 2000?
I graduated in 97.
97, okay. Yeah, we're close. I was in 99.
Yeah, I'm old.
what bands did you play in high school? Because I'm imagining that some of the dudes that I knew crossed paths with you.
Yeah, I played in a band called You're an Idiot, spelled U-R-I-N-E, idiot, as in piss idiot.
All right, good.
I'm trying to remember the names because this is forever ago.
Were you in Seventh Seal?
I was in Seventh Seal.
Okay, that's the band I wanted to ask you about because I started playing drums in high school too, but I never really had a band.
Mm-hmm.
I was never good. I picked Lars Ulrich to be my.
I'm sorry.
My guy.
I'm sorry.
I couldn't have picked the worst guy.
Yeah, actually, I have to admit, early on, freshman sophomore year, I actually was really into Metallica, and really into Van Halen. I mean, really into Van Halen. Alex Van
but
Halen
even
was,
he's a way better drummer. That's a way better choice than what I did.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that Lars was just he was so fucking metal. I mean, he was this angry European who just played with two kick drums, and it was so
pissy long haired Dutchman.
Yeah. I mean, it was just one of those things. Like he now I look at him, I was like, wow, what a douche. But at the time, it was like, man, he's the only guy on MTV that has two bass drums. He's the only guy out there who's really doing all the different things he's doing in a band that, I mean, I got into Metallica because of James Hetfield's lyrics. That's
mm-hmm.
what caught
yeah,
me
too. Yep.
That I was just like, this guy is so mad at everything. And that's what caught me.
Okay, let me break it down. Until It Sleeps was the first Metallica song I ever heard. It was very sheltered. Like, I didn't know nothing about Metallica.
Wow.
The video on MTV was the first time I ever saw him. Now, if you think about that in context, like, you've never seen Metallica, but you see that video.
That would...
It's a little bit, you know...
That's
it'll
a mind
grab
fuck.
You. It'll grab you.
Yeah, that's a mind fuck. That'll do something. That'd be like the first thing you hear from Alice in Chains is off Jars of Clay.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Like, just, whoa.
Actually, you know what? I bet I could probably cop to that, too. When you start getting into, like, I mean, I was hooked immediately,
mm-hmm.
but Load was the first one I got. But then I asked around, and I'm like, which one should I get next? And Justice for All was the one that I heard, which was weird because everybody else would have been, like, Master Puppets, Ride the Lightning, maybe. But
Ride
Justice
the Lightning
was
the first that I had, and that was the first I heard. I actually, my parents were more badasses. I mean, they really were. Like, they refused to shelter me. They refused to censor me. They were, oh, there's something nude on a movie? Let's see how embarrassed you get, you know? I remember watching Revenge of the Nerds and being like, I should not be here right now. And I was like, 6?
Yeah.
And being like, man, I hope I don't get my parents in trouble for that one. But it was just one of those things where, like, I was like, damn, they were like, no, you're going to deal with this because this is something that's going to happen in your life. And they were, I mean, they would play Clapton and they would play Fish Lung and they would play Firefall and they would play, you know, Cream and all these things. I mean, it was phenomenal. It was so cool that they would do that. And when I'd ask something, like, when I listen to Bob Dylan, I'm like, what's Mr. Tambourine Man about? And they'd tell me, well, it's about a drug dealer. It's in the days before, you know, when things were so censored. And, you know, I remember listening to Janis Joplin and going, I think she's cussing there. And they both laughed. They said, yeah, she got away with one before the censors realized. And it's Bobby McGee. She actually says, me and Bobby motherfucking McGee. And I was like 7 going, that is so cool.
I think the first time I ever heard curse word in a song had to have been the Violent Femmes. I can't even think of the name of the song now. Why can't I get just one kiss?
No, why can't I just go and fuck? Yeah.
That was the first time I ever heard a curse word in a song, and I remember being like, I remember feeling really dirty about it.
Yeah,
I was just like, I shouldn't have heard that, and I like, wanted to make sure that nobody knew I heard that. trying to erase it. I don't know. This is all weird.
No, I know how that feels. I mean, I remember that.
Yeah, but lyrically, like, looping back to the Metallica thing, like, Dyer's Eve was the one that I was like, holy shit. Like, this... It was the opposite of what you just said about your own parents. Like, mm-hmm. he was just, like, you know, totally clipped out by them. And, like, that was when I knew. I was like, holy fuck, this guy's, like, not only is he really awesome at this, but it's true. Like, nobody says...
You it's truth, yeah. It was very punk, yeah. and that's just it. Is, see, my mom was a surfer and grew up in the 60s and 70s, and she was very into a lot of that music. I mean, I remember being in California real early on in my life, and seeing street punk performers, and her just being like, "Let's check it out." One of my first albums she bought me, it was Red Hot Chili Peppers, and it was like early 80s, and it was a little, you know, little 8-inch vinyl, and I was like, "This is the coolest thing ever." And my mom bought that for me. And right. and always supported that. When I told them I wanted to be a musician, I mean, they kind of laughed and said, well, don't count on feeding yourself, but cool. Whatever we can do to help you, we're happy to. And they did as much as they could to do that.
You started with drums?
I started on drums. Actually,
why was that?
My older sister is... she's a prodigy. She could learn anything, any instrument, things like that. And she she was probably in seventh grade. And I was in, she's 6-7 years older than me, so I was probably in first or second grade. And she talked my parents into buying her a drum set. And her room was, you know, easels and art supplies and really cool bookshelves and things like that. I mean, she was a very ahead of her times 7th grader, and I had, like, Star Wars posters. That was basically it. So the drum set went in my room because I was small. I mean, that's really what it was. They're like, cool, you're shoved in the corner, drum set goes here. My sister lost interest in the drums pretty quick, and I didn't. Yeah. I would sit there with the brushes in the middle of the night. I've been an insomniac my whole life. And I learned most of what I learned musically from watching.
You look rested, though.
I'm
kidding.
I know, I actually got mad sleep for me.
Really?
Last night. I got like 4.5 hours last night. I woke up feeling so good, but I woke up...
Now I feel like an asshole.
I woke up at like 4. I was like... What just happened? Oh, I feel what day good. Is it? And yeah, it was. I just kind of wandered around for a minute, and I mean, it was. I mean, I start my day usually around, you know, 6. Right. It was a little early, but man, I felt good today. But
I'm good for you.
No, I mean,
sorry for being a dick.
No, it's expected. Expected. No. So I watched her. She played right handed, but she's very ambidextrous. And would play. She would lead with her right hand on purpose, even though she was majority left handed. I learned from sitting across from her. So I actually play left handed. Mm-hmm. On a right-handed kit.
It's interesting.
So it's set up traditional with the hi-hat over on the left shoulder, but I play left-handed. I lead everything with my left, and it's actually faster.
Yeah, it adds a couple things to everything you do.
Yeah.
I bought one instructional DVD. It was the guy from Dave Matthews Band.
And that's how Carter Beaufort. Carter Beaufort's a badass.
That's how he plays too. Like he can go either way, but he tries to teach you. He's like, look, you know, you've been cross-sticking all this time. Just try this. Lead with the left. Mm-hmm. It's like you get to add like 2 hits to anything you do just by doing that.
It frees you up.
Well, I never figured it out.
Yeah. Well, what I started doing is I started figuring out, okay, well, if I got this hi-hat here and I can cross here, why can't I play with this hi-hat over here on my right? Mm-hmm. And my kit is very custom. I mean, if you look on Facebook, you can see my kit, and it's got saw blades and shit on it and a couple different hi-hats. And people are like, wait a second, that's like a set of quads. And I played tenors in the marching band in high school. Mm-hmm. And so I set my drum up. It was just way faster for me.
Nice.
And you know, I figured
out. Are you good? Like, I know it's a dumb question, but like...
You know, okay, here's the thing.
Like, put it up against the stuff that you listen to, like, on a CD. Like, not the bands that you know or none of that stuff, but like...
Most of the songs I hear, I can play. I'm not as good as, like, Thomas Hake. I'm not, you know, from a Sugar. I couldn't pull that. I wouldn't be able to pull everything from Danny Carey, from Tool.
He's ridiculous, though.
Like, but I mean, he's one of the ones I was like, I want to learn this. And I actually spent a lot of time figuring out. I can play about 90% of the Enema album on the drums.
It's impressive. That was one I never even tried to touch. You know, probably the only real work I've tried to put into learning any drum tracks from like bands that I listen to would be Lamb of God in the last couple of years.
Oh, dude.
I just think that guy's fucking badass.
That guy's unreal. Unreal. Yeah. Like, I catch a lot of flack. I'm really not a big Lamb of God fan.
Right.
I'm really not. Like, they're pretty chunky, but my God, the drums
he's
and the rhythms, it's drums and the bass. It's the way that they put that together from way back in the Burn the Priest days. Huh, it that has always just blown my mind.
Well, what I like about him too is that, like, you know, of course he really, you know, takes center stage some of the time, but he knows how to fall back in the pocket and, like, make it just sound cool and let the rest of it happen, you know? That's what I like about him. Exactly. A lot of these other drummers are just like...
See, that's what, you know, I mean, like, I like blast beats. I like stuff. I mean, I can play Suffocation and Nile and some of those things. Not, I can't do it sustained for a real long time. I mean, right. I like speed metal. I like death metal. I like tech death, In Flames. This has always blown my mind. I mean, there's just a lot of those bands that I could just say, oh my god, I love the way the drums sound on that, or I love the way the bass and the rhythm section sounds on that. I can pick that out, but for me, it was always about developing my sound. I realized pretty early on that the way I play drums isn't very normal. I can read music. I can read intonations. I can actually tune my drums to different keys.
Do you do that?
I do. Depending on who I'm playing with.
No one does that.
If they're in drop C, I do either a diminished C tuning with my, and I actually tune to a piano if I can. If people are playing in drop D, I'll play in an E flat just to be a little bit above it, but not quite. You know, because I understand guitar, and actually, I mean, Sam Weiser, Raj, used to throw the guitar guamar at me and just like, learn this. If you can't understand this, you don't deserve to be in a band. I mean, that was his take. And I don't think he ever realized it, but I mean, he taught me a lot.
Yeah.
Steve Bennett, who is a guy I played in a band in, he was my best friend for years, and I played in a couple bands with him in high school, and then again, he was actually the bass player and one of the major songwriters in Tesseract, in the original incarnation of that band, and phenomenal songwriter, amazing pianist, and he would sit and just teach, and I swallowed it as much as I could. I would take as much as they could teach me, and I just wanted to run with it.
Right.
So, I try not to be like anybody else, but at the same time, sometimes it's fun to just, I mean, I like blues, I like jazz,
mm-hmm.
I love sometimes just jamming out. I'm actually playing drums on a project now that's a studio project, the Broken Poet Society. David Angel, and he's like, look, man, I want you to put this together, and we kind of, a bunch of us got together that have played together in bands over the years, and we're like, let's do this, let's write this out for him the way he wants.
What's up?
Y'all more?
No.
No, you good?
One more.
Say hi.
Keto.
You want cereal? Mm-hmm. Cereal, please.
Hi, Lexi.
Hi, Lexi. You can pause that if you want me to grab this real quick. Or you can keep it going. I'm not
picky.
You can catch whatever you want.
Yeah, let's pause it.
Nope.
Let's pause it. All right, we're going to probably pause here and there because now we've got a third sit-in.
Yeah, this is my eldest daughter. And I usually don't tell people her name, but I guess I should say her name is Felix.
Okay.
I usually don't tell people. I keep my private life very private. And a lot of people are shocked to know that I'm a parent. Even they're like, why? Who would let you have kids?
I don't. You know what? I think when we talked the other day, that was the first time I knew that you had kids.
Yeah. People are really shocked.
I'm not shocked. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever.
She's going to just flip the
mood
lights
lighting around here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she knows better.
Fast forward to the record label, the spiteful record label.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I spent a lot of time with Seven Seal in particular, me and Isaiah and Sam and Mike, I mean, even TJ, I mean, all of us, we'd go play shows, we'd do this, and it was just this constant, we've got to figure this out, we got to make a living, we got to get somewhere, and people were always dangling that in front of us, like, hey, I'm going to get you a deal, or I'm going to book you here, and it sucked. I mean, we'd go to shows, and people would know who we were, and they'd be like, oh my god, can I get a signature, can I get this, and we'd be like, yeah, can I get yours?
Right.
Like, you know, and we'd be...
Well, booking shows where? Like, I know you guys played at, like, the Eagles and stuff, but, like, where else?
We played in Junction. We played in Pharmacy, Mexico. Corey fucking Bain. Anybody who was at that show is going to know that shit. We played in Leadville.
My dad's hometown.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was an insane trip. And that, if you ever get a chance to get either Ancient Myth or Michael Gene Bradley, Killsign Kilo...
Mm-hmm.
On your show, you asked them about the Corey fucking Baines, or even Raj, man. There was some insanity on that trip.
I might call him just for that.
No,
because I don't really know him. I would just be like, hey, tell me about the...
No, if you called Mike Bradley right now and said Corey fucking Bain, he'd be like, Corey fucking Bain. I mean, he would say it right back. Raj would say that. I mean, all of them. I mean, we all have such a jacked up, ridiculous history. But we'd go to shows, and people would be like, oh, cool, and we'd take demos, like... We went to
I'm eating a cutie right now.
Yeah, by the way. Cuties are good for you. Yes. Got to get that vitamin C.
Try it.
Later he's going to get an injection of other stuff, but we'll leave that.
That's Jesus. Come on, bro.
No, not Jesus. I don't. He's not into that.
Well, I brought my watchtowers with me because that's the last part of it. But.
Oh, okay. That's good. That's good. Anyway. Yeah, you do know I can't read, right?
That's fair enough.
Okay.
It's in Braille.
No, it's even better. Do you put it at the drive-thrus?
Yeah.
Excellent. That's a good idea.
Right in front of the ATM machine.
Yeah, right there. Right there where it was like, I can't do this. I don't know why I switched to old man voice there. But
that was really weird.
It was a little strange. I just got more and more pissed off, and I got married in 2000. A lot of people don't know.
Whoa.
That. Yeah. Actually, you want to know what? It was the weirdest thing ever. My life is so screwed up. There's a long story about how that happened that has come full circle.
Right.
Just to put bluntly, whether she wants me to admit to this or not, the woman I'm in love with now is the one who got me to get married to the woman who became my wife then.
That sounds about like par for the course for female behavior.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. She was, I think, 14 at the time. I was like, you should be married, and we got married, and then I fell in love with her like a decade and a half later. The world.
You still listen to all the 14-year-old females that tell you stuff?
No. I didn't actually listen to her. Basically, at that time, I'll be honest with you, I didn't actually do the whole proposal. I was just informed we were getting married.
Girl, right, hang on. We're getting off the point. Go back to the regular little thing.
Yeah. Well, I was married and playing in Seven Seal. We were playing a lot of shows and starting to get some real notoriety, playing for some bigger acts, opening up, doing some new stuff. And my wife called me one day. I was assistant managing. I was actually third key, so I was like not even really an assistant manager. It was basically like, hey, you're our bitch, but we're going to give you a title.
If the fire alarm goes off, we're calling you.
Yeah. I mean, I was on cue at the music store in Glenwood.
And oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I used to manage up there, and I was working there.
Oh, man, I forgot about that. That's why I know you from, because I've worked across the street from you forever.
Yeah, they called, you know, she called me one day and said, hey, are you sitting down? And I was like, shit, you wrecked my truck, or, you know, I thought all sorts of things. This is her way of spacing out. You think this is what everybody does in their head when they're listening to really good music. That's like her Led Zeppelin moment right there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, man.
I love it, dude. Having a child with Down syndrome, best thing ever. Seriously, I've learned more from her and
I've heard that from people.
My cousin's autistic, and I learned a lot from him and then her. It's just been...
And you, like, what's your thing?
I'm just fucktarded. Okay. It's a little different.
Fair enough.
It's a little different. I really don't have an excuse for being the way I am. I had great parents who stayed together.
Hang on, for everybody that just had to listen to that, he was telling about how she just wrecked his truck and stuff like that. The kid's kind of freaking out a little bit, and I just zoned in on the kid, and he brought me back around. He's like, you know, she's fine.
Yeah.
She's loving life right now.
Yeah, she's happy as hell. It's like one of our favorite
things. I apologize, I'm an asshole.
No, you're good. You're good.
Yeah.
It's an experience being in my life and in my household.
No, I'm enjoying it so far. Thank you.
Hey, and you're always welcome. That's kind of, I have an open door policy, as in I don't lock shit unless I'm leaving.
Maybe I shouldn't have posted the address on Facebook, but whatever.
There is that possibility. Who knows? You know, show up for dinner. Just, you know, bring booze. I, in being married and stuff, she said, you know, I'm pregnant. I was the guy who was like, I do not want to have kids. I don't want to be a procreator. I don't want to have that responsibility for somebody else. The second those words came out of her mouth, I was happier than shit.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait for this. And I was instantly excited. And I was kind of reading the writing on the wall. I mean, Rog is getting ready to go to school. Because he's like stupid,
I was
going to
say,
smart.
Like, what was going on that maybe it was like a relief almost. Like.
Yeah, he was stupid smart. Mike had already quit to do his military career and some other things like that. TJ was pretty disenchanted and really didn't want to be doing, I mean.
So the band was a burden at this
point. It was one of those things, like, we were all struggling so hard to keep it together.
Yeah.
It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
We weren't enjoying each other's company. I mean, I had been living with Rod, and we could barely talk to each other. I call him Rod. It's Isaiah. But we just, it was so hard, and we were so close to each other, but we couldn't even talk. Like, we couldn't.
No, that's
so,
what happens with any relationship. It's like you spend so much time with each other.
Well, being in a band is like being in a family that you're married to that you work with. I mean, that's really
that
what
doesn't
it
put out.
Yeah. I mean, it's like absolutely every frustration in the world. Like, everything you can pile on is in a band.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be music. It's supposed to be artistic. And That's why there are solo artists and things of that nature. Right. But I was looking at my bank account. I was looking at my life. I was looking at everything. And something in my head clicked. I was like, I've got to change up. I got to do something different. I got to get the fuck out of here again. Because I hadn't left in a couple years. I used to spend my summers in California and, you know, doing mm-hmm. different things. My parents were cool like that. They would help me travel. I would go do things. And I hadn't done it since I'd become, quote unquote, self-aware.
Right.
And so her family was from Kansas and Iowa. And we moved to Wichita. And this is in 2000. Like, March of 2000, we made the decision to move. And I think in April, we were gone. I mean, it was make the decision and go. There was a promise. I literally knew her cousin Candy and her Candy's boyfriend. The only two people I knew in the whole fucking state. I had a nervous breakdown once we got to about Burlington, Colorado, and I couldn't see the mountains anymore. I did actually curl right. up and lay down on the floorboards of the car and freak yeah. the fuck out for about 30 minutes. And then I saw the giant, you know, the sign for the world's largest gopher, and I was like, oh, wait, I'm in Kansas now. And I snapped out of it. But we're there. I got myself in school. Took some different courses in business finance and business management, and actually accelerated through that so rapidly that got my degrees taken care of very quickly and went to work for Citigroup. And I was suit and tie. I'm up there, you know, teaching 400-some people how to work their finances. I specialized in bankruptcy reversal or avoidance. I mean, I was doing very well, and I was actually making a very good living. I was also going to cooking school at the time and putting myself through some things there and working at Hooters, of all places, because they hired me, and it was extra cash.
Serving?
I wish, because I would look fucking hot. I mean, I have the moves. I've got the moves.
Jesus.
No, it was actually a lot of fun. I met some of my best friends, Tim Vaughn and Taylor Heinz, and I'm still friends with those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, and a lot of the girls that I knew back then, I mean, they were just great people. They were yeah. great to me, and they were very accepting, and they loved my wife. When my son was born, they loved him. I mean, they were very, very cool. I don't regret any of that. I don't regret going to school. I don't regret the people I met. Paul Albright was a huge influence on my life, and he's the guy who trained me. Like, this is how you fill out the paperwork. This is how you talk to people. And he developed a business sense in me. And through that, I'm watching and working with my friends. I was like, I could do this. Like, I could right. actually, I could have my own business.
Right.
And it had never occurred to me before to be a businessman. It was always, I work for somebody. I'm a worker bee. I mean, in high school, I was in everything, but I was always the guy, like, rigging the lights. Or, you know, right. I was in National Honor Society, but I was the guy in the back. You know, I was right. in jazz band, but I was, like, the backup drummer. I mean, I was never anything...
Right.
I was never the standout guy.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
always the shadow. And I said, maybe I could do this. And I kind of made the decision on the whim. It was my birthday, actually. And I just got weirded out and drove to Sedgwick County down to the courthouse and filled out a business license and slapped down my money, and Prophecy Records was born. I couldn't even tell you how I came up with the name. It literally just came to me as I was filling the paperwork out, and I just wrote it down.
Back in 2001, this is.
This is 2001.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, that was my thing, and I started.
So how long,
as a
like,
promoter.
Was it like right away you like dove into it, or did it kind of just like you let it sit there? You're like, what am I going
to
do with this?
I kind of told my friends, like, they'd been listening to some of the Seven Seal tracks that I'd recorded. I'd been back to Aspen since and, you know, recorded some. I'd done some things, and they were like, dude. Like, you guys actually, like, you had something. And I'd go on the radio as well. Joe Roach ran the radio show. I'd call in the middle of the night, and we'd talk shit about different music. And, you know, this is still at the height of the nu metal.
Right.
I mean, you know, and when bands come down, System of a Down came to town at the Cotillion. Big, round fucking stage. I mean, I got passes. I got to go. I was promoting. And I was, you know, Rage, a couple of guys from Rage came through and just stopped into the radio station. I got to, like... That's sit there cool. and like sit on the other side of glass while he talked to Tom Morello. I'm like
staring at him.
Yeah, James Eha from Smashing Pumpkins
yep.
came in, and I was like, damn. And this is the time, you know,
that's a big one. That's a Bigfoot sighting kind
of. Oh yeah, I was just like, dude, this is amazing, and I was loving it. I was digging what I was doing. I wasn't really making no money,
right?
But it was fun. I mean, one of the first big shows I promoted on.
Well, it's kind of like this, like, you know, I haven't made anything off this, but what, like. Like, the perks that come off of, you know, being around mm-hmm. that type of stuff is what's cool for
yeah.
me right now. Like, not that a lot of it's come through, but
yeah,
I dig it, so.
Yeah. Well, and what I realized is that I was doing something different. And really, it was just a promotional thing. It was me getting a chance to bring, I mean, the band Shovel was out of Wichita Town. God, they were good. They were so good. And I loved going to watch them at the different venues and going in, and, you know, there was a lot of bands coming through. Fear Factory came through. Marilyn Manson, that was my first big show. I actually got to do the Manson at the arena there, and I was like, this is amazing. Like, yeah. It was very cold. I ended up having a 20-minute conversation with Scooter from Cold about dog racing, because there was a dog track right down the road. And I was like, why am I talking about this? But it was just, cool. It was so random. It was so cool. I really kind of was enjoying it. And then shortly after all of this started happening, we made the decision to move to Colorado. I had been chosen to open an office on the Western Slope and to manage an office in North Glen over in Denver.
Yeah.
And we looked at the opportunities, we looked at the possibilities, and my wife, like I said, she's my best friend. We had a very strange relationship. It was not your classic marriage. We were best friends who hung out. That was pretty much the extent of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I have any regrets or anything. I mean,
right.
We loved each other. We had a great time, but it was not.
Are you guys still cool now?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Like, we still talk. She's a phenomenal mother. I mean, we went through a pretty rough patch for a while there with some of the things she did. But great mom. She's got a kick-ass, I call him her husband. I mean, they're basically married. I mean, they've been living together for years. They got a couple kids together.
Right.
My son is a fucking alien. I mean, he is an alien. The kid does, like, advanced mathematics and sciences and asks really random, really intelligent questions. Like, he brought up the God particle last summer, and I'm like, where do you read this shit? Like, stuff that challenges me. Kid can't spell to save his life, but, you know.
Yeah, there's always a piece missing.
There's something, yeah, but, I mean, and his sense of fear is very skewed. But, I mean, she's great. She's taking care of him.
Too much or not enough?
Both. I'm gonna go with both on that one. Like, there's he's kind of too far on one side of it, and maybe not quite there on the other. But very open, very honest, real sweet kid. Yeah, we're great. And she just didn't want me to be a musician. She didn't want me to be these things. She was the button down, go to work, come home, we have dinner, we do this, we do that. Very traditionally raised family, and that was something that I didn't have. My parents both worked real hard. And you know, I remember being in seventh grade and my mom going, "Oh, you're hungry? Better learn to cook. Right. You make me a list and I'll buy you the food, but I'm not going to be home to cook. You want to eat something that isn't thrown in the microwave? You're cooking." Very empowering, though, to have that ability. And so, these are all things going on. So when we get back, I did very well business-wise. I mean, my office in Denver took off. My office over here, I hired like 27, 28 people within the first 2 weeks of being here.
Just for the record label.
This was for this financial firm, for City.
Oh, okay, for City. Okay.
And so I'm making good money, and I start realizing I hate myself. I hated everything about me. I hated my suit. I hated my tie. I hated everything that I was.
What are you saying? I'm just kidding.
No, that's. I mean, I got three suits. I don't like being the suit.
Well, was it? Was it the job, or was it like what it kind of? Like what you had to do
selling
to be good
insurance,
at it, like,
selling finances, selling stuff. Like,
it's a little greasy, isn't it? Like,
it is. You feel like a fucking car salesman.
Yeah.
No matter what, you feel like I'm selling you a lemon, even though I knew the products were right. One person screwed up or didn't fucking make a payment, or they did their mortgage, and people were literally living hand to mouth, and they're like, "I want to do all this investing," and it's like, "Oh, you are so screwing yourself!
Right.
Like, don't do this." And you're telling them, "Yes, it's going to be great for you, but you need to start slower." And people just get excited, and you feel like you just sold them. And yeah, you're collecting these checks, and it's like, awesome.
Let me ask you this: like, did you ever like knowingly like really fuck somebody over?
No. I can say honestly that, and to my knowledge, no one around me did either. I mean, I never caught anybody doing
it. Well, it's not like you were in the mortgage game and all that.
Well,
kind of stuff,
I was in the mortgage game. Yeah, I was doing loans. I was doing mortgages, things like that, but. My goal and Citigroup's goal, honestly, at the time was, and honestly, to an extent now, was never give somebody a product that doesn't improve their situation. If there's no improvement, you do not let them do it.
Right.
And they were adamant about that. You know, the Primerica division, Citigroup, Travelers, all of them, they were adamant about you help people.
Right.
And this is before the whole rush of anybody can get a mortgage, anybody can get, I mean, it was before the whole house rush. So it was still pretty honest, but I still hated it. I hated everything about it, particularly insurance, because this is like, here's this product you need, so when shit goes wrong, you're taken care of. Plan on dying. Fuck that. It's dumb. Like, I hated it. Like, talking to people about their money and death and what they're going to do, it was as morbid as I am, it was really greasy. And just, it made me just, I mean, no amount of showering and bathing would get me clean. And there were times where I just wanted to grab my hair through the roof of my mouth and just scrub my brain. Like, it just, it was horrible. And
so I wasn't, so then what? Like my you said you were doing really well with it. Like,
the money was awesome, but
wasn't worth like how you're feeling.
So I just one day quit.
No.
I just fucking walked away. I was like, I'm done. And I went and started doing HVAC again. I started, you know, hanging cooling systems, and I did commercial and industrial air conditioning systems for a couple of companies, and I did that for a while. And then Steve Bennett came to me and said, "What are you doing with what are you doing with music? What are you doing with the record label?" I said, "Not a lot since I've been in Colorado. I mean, I've done a little bit of booking for a couple of companies, but that's really it." And he's like, "Quit your job." I said, "What?" He goes, "Quit your job. Go find something part-time. Quit your job. Let's play music." Quit the next day. Nice. You know?
Were you in a position, or were you not worried about it?
I was scared to death. It was stupid.
Right.
I mean, it was a dumb decision, but it was the right decision for me, regardless of it being a poor choice, responsibility-wise. You know, it made sense. And I went and got a job actually driving for a linen company.
Mm-hmm.
I delivered linen 3 days a week to make the rent and the bills and pay things and started seeing the writing on the wall and realized, well, my wife is going to leave me soon. And she did. And
like you said, you saw that like based, I watched based it coming. On you or based on what?
Based on me. She was unhappy. She didn't like the way things were going. There was no romance, you know, which I'm not a cuddly person.
I disagree, but...
Well, I look squishy. That's different. That's not me. I was not the kind of person that you could just come to. And she had other goals in life. She had other, you know, being a family, being those things. And I was the dreamer. She's like, you're just a dreamer. And even recently...
You know, that's a weird thing to kind of think about. Because, like, for me, like, I do this because it's, like, I have my day job that's mm-hmm. safe enough. And this is, you know, doesn't kill me to do it. And it's fun.
Yeah.
So, like, right now, like, there's nothing on the line with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of why I chose this thing. Because, like, well, first of all, like, I don't have any, like, musical aspirations or anything like that. But, like, for me to quit a job to go do something, like, I don't even know what it would be. You know, like, maybe work at a firing range. Just be the, you know, shell monkey over there. Like,
yeah.
I would do that. But, like, to really quit and be like, you literally have to drop everything you're doing and go do that, that would be a lot for me to do because it's just not my
style. I think that's a lot for anybody. And actually...
Well, no, but I admire anybody that can,
actually, you know? I had this conversation with Audrey Kelly, actually. I call it the pink shirt syndrome. For most men in today's society, the biggest risk you could take is to be a straight man who wears khakis and basic polos,
mm-hmm.
and one day show up to work with a bright pink shirt on and dare somebody to say something to you. That's a big risk to a lot of men where they say they're comfortable in their sexuality and who they are. They're not.
Okay.
You know, that's a big risk.
Yeah.
My idea of a big risk is going and borrowing $2.8 million and be like, I don't know if I can even pay this back, but let's see what I can do with it.
Right.
Because I've actually done that.
Well,
no, I never. It fell apart for anything else. That's just it. Like it never went anywhere. But I took the risk.
The other guy killed himself or what?
No, it was just one of those things where I ended up trying to put it into a venue. I secured financing, did everything. Deal
for an actual venue?
Yeah, I was building a venue in Glenwood. There's a spoiler alert. I've actually got one in the works for Glenwood. I've been working on for about a year and a half.
Oh shit!
Yeah. All the plans are drawn up. It's all engineered. Fucking business plans, sweet, head man. Finances out there.
So we got your business. Like, you finally are making
I started actually doing something with the label. And when I started doing that and just looking at what I was doing musically, it made sense for me to start playing music again. Okay. And Payan had just broken up, which was, you know, that's Beard from Jack and Jill.
Mm-hmm.
And Shoyt from The Haven Effect. And
What was the band called before?
It was called Payan.
Okay, yeah.
P-A-E-N. And I like saying it just like that because we go, what did you just say? Go home, words, you're drunk. I love that band. We had a great time. And I was their touring manager and their booking manager for a while. And It was fun. It was a lot of fun. I could tell you stories till the sun comes up about some of the shit we did back then. But the big point there was it was Barrick and Jeremiah. And Jeremiah from Intertwined now, and Barrick's from Intertwined now. I called Jeremiah, I said, man, you want to sing in a band? And he goes, with who? I said, well, I'm not really sure, but I know it's me and Raj. And I'm betting Sugars, which is Terry Secor, who was in Seven Seal, and Steve Bennett are getting involved. And I think TJ's involved too. He goes, I'll see you Tuesday. Like, literally, just like, I'll see you Tuesday. He hitchhiked up.
Nice.
And showed up, and literally, Sam and I had been working on music for 4 years. Stuff that was beyond the scope of Seven Seal.
Right.
Because, in all honesty, like, as much as fun as that was, and it was just straight ahead, like, kind of like punk metal rock, it was not challenging to anybody.
Was there only three of you guys, or was it four?
There was three of us at one point. There was five of us at one point. I mean, the lineup was very fluid. The three core members for a long time were Isaiah, Sam, and TJ Rowe. And then I replaced TJ. And Mike Bradley would be in, and then he's out, and then he was in, and then he was out. And then TJ came along, and then we had T-Nuts for a while, Jesse Edmonds. And then when he left, Terry came in. And that was the lineup that really started making waves, was Sugars, T-Nuts. At the time, it was Reverend Pedro, was what we called Ralge. that's actually when I earned the moniker of Psycho. Before that, I was the Wenchel Man. People started coming Psycho, and that developed into Psychotic, because I like fucked up spellings. And then Isaiah, who I always called Almighty Rod. His name's actually Rodney Bernal, and Isaiah Bernal.
We'll have a list of all these people on the podcast.
You're going to need a bunch of cliff's notes of this musical conundrum that we all exist in. That's when I met Opie.
Uh-huh.
That's when I met...
Fuck Opie, by the way.
Yeah, fuck Opie. Big, tall... God, I love that guy.
Just kidding, I love him too.
I love that guy. I actually was bullshitting with him earlier, and he started making poop jokes at me, so...
I almost said, hey, is he around? Like, you should see if he wants to come do this too, but...
Yeah, well, he's down in Austin. He'd do a remote, though.
He's in Austin?
Yeah. He's lived in Austin for years.
No, I knew that.
He came back for a little bit here with the funeral, and then went back down there. And he's running Smart Fox Studios, the mastering studios, getting ready to start doing recording and shit.
No, I do.
Moment, I'm watching the cat maybe jump in the hot tub.
That'd be amazing.
Here. She's thinking about it. She's thinking about it. She might do it.
Scream or something, maybe it'll...
Hey! She twitched. That's about the best. I made the dog bark, though. yeah. I'm sorry. I'm easily distracted.
No, that'll go up on the YouTube channel.
That's good. no, we...
Okay, so wait a minute. Hang on.
We're working stuff. So Sam just drives over from CU Boulder and shows up and says, cool, let's play music. We'd never been in the same room to play.
Now, what band came out of this?
This was Tesseract.
Okay.
This is a band that was...
Now, okay, clearly... Let me see where we're at here. Clearly, you have stories for years about, all your bands and all your different products and stuff like that. I guess what I'm mostly wanting to talk about this time, because I'm going to talk to another associate of yours in Denver pretty soon.
Candies. Yeah, she told me today.
You didn't know that?
Don't you follow
my every move on Facebook?
Actually, I did actually see that on Twitter, and then she told me today that was happening soon. I was like, I don't know when that is. So...
Well, was I supposed to clear it with you?
No.
Okay. I'm just checking. All right. Okay, is it cool?
Yeah, no, it's fine. Great. Dude, Candice is awesome. I love that girl. She is one of the most random, spontaneous people I've ever talked to, and I dig it.
I say on the show a ton that, like, social media and, like, the internet is just, it's still, like, I'm like a child in a candy store. I'm like, this is amazing. Like, look at all these people doing shit, and, like, it's cool to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How many pages do you admin on Facebook? Yeah, you look a little...
43.
Is that for real?
Yeah. You want to see him?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I like the majority of them. So we're talking bands. We're talking the record label. Mm-hmm. You've got movie company.
Yeah, I got the film company, Wicked Muse.
Wicked Muse, film company. There you go.
Yeah.
Tattoo stuff, Karen magazines. And you're one-third of Sponsor My Skills, too, right?
I'm the marketing director, yeah. I actually admin that.
Okay, so you're one-fourth or one-eighth, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're, like, the third of, like, if there's three guys.
Yeah.
If there's a Mount Rushmore of Sponsor My Skills, you're the guy in the end.
Yeah.
Smaller head.
Yes. Okay. I'm the guy that they added and his ear fell off. that's me. There's a lot there. I also have my photography. I have my clothing line.
Psychocosm Clothing.
Yeah, Psychocosm Clothing. All of these came out of being in Tesseract and expanding.
Do you feel like maybe you're not good at any of these things?
Absolutely. Every day. No, every day. I actually know that is it.
Wait. That wasn't my real question. What? Oh, we got an emergency.
No, I'm turning the light on. Okay. I'm watching you start doing the whole... As you're doing the squint thing at me.
That's just how I...
Okay.
I have weird mannerisms. Why so many different things? Because it's not like you just, like, have all these things set up and they're just, like, sitting there. Like, you're actively, like...
I'm active
doing new things with all of it. Like, yes. Why?
What happened there is the reason that and I was actually going to get to this with the whole Tesseract thing. By being in Tesseract and doing what I was doing there, I started realizing that I could manage a band that I was in while working for other bands.
Right.
And I created a business model. And while doing that, I actually created a construction company with Steve off the exact same business model. It's called Performance Design.
Damn it. I was hoping for, like...
Something really cool. Yeah. It was...
Psychotic Construction.
Yeah, no, I mean, we really used the construction company.
The Range Demolition. Filtered
money through to pay for record label stuff.
Okay.
Through that, I started getting into film, which is something I was interested in high school. I actually would go try out for movies, and I loved doing stunts. I had learned how to light myself on fire, things like that. You never saw a machine or self-performance. I actually did that occasionally.
Good for you, you know what? Just be like... Yeah, good. I like that.
Yeah, every once in a while, at parties, we had dinner a couple nights. And Kenny was over here, our poi spinner, Kenny Boy, was over here spinning fire, and he let me manipulate. I actually grabbed the fire off of his poi thing and held it for a second and put it back on. And it's just shit like that I figured out how to do. Squibs, and those were just interesting to me. Learning how special effects works. My sister actually has a master's of props design, and you know, there's times where it's like I'll just randomly be like, how do I make fake bone? And she knows how to make, like, do you need it to break? Do you need to hit somebody with it? I mean, she knows all these random things.
Right.
And those things fascinate me.
You live in a world of how it's made.
Yeah, I really do. Like, I love things like that. Mm-hmm. I love watching, you know, Mythbusters and watching those different things and learning from them, experiencing them. I want to know. If somebody asks me a question, I will always answer truthfully. 9 times out of 10, the answer is, I don't know.
Right.
But I don't ever want to say I don't know again. I never want to be able to answer that question twice with that answer. Right. The next time I get asked that, I damn well better know the answer to that question.
And explain the gas blowback system on an AK-47.
I thought you would know
that one.
No, I do because of the physics, but like that's kind of vague. Like, explain it. Like, how does that work and reload it, or why does it jam?
No. Let's just say how would one round cycle to the next round? Pop in a magazine, rack it, fire, and how does it cycle to the next one to where you can fire again?
Well, it's a creation of the gas. The gas knee creates a vacuum and automatically creates a cycle where when the spring goes back, it has to go somewhere. It's a reverse inertia against the force of the bullet leaving the exit.
Good enough.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
I mean,
that's
a very layman term.
It's not untrue, but yeah. That's good. I
don't understand the basics. That is one thing. I love guns, but I don't know that much about them. I mean,
you will have to go out someday.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I'm pretty accurate, but I can clean them. I can put them together. I can take them apart and do all that stuff. But when it comes to the mechanics, I just want to know that it shoots straight and doesn't hurt anybody that I don't mean to.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, so the film company thing, What have you done with that? Do you have any, like, videos or, like, any short films or anything?
Okay, I've done a couple music videos, one for Intertwined. Another one that will never be seen because we filmed it and then the band broke up before we actually even went to editing. So that's going to go nowhere. We've done a little bit of commercial work.
Not even just for throw it out there for
fun? No, not really. I mean, I respect the guys that were in that band too much to be like, cool, I'm going to capitalize on your demise. I mean, that's one of those things.
What if you just finished and handed it to them?
Like,
you
do what I've considered that, but there's a lot that goes into editing. And
was it good? If it's not good, then...
It was kind of boring as far as a video concept is concerned, but it was shot very cool. Everything was shot from 6 inches. Shot it from the ground. They looked like these giants. It was very Gumby. It was kind of like being on acid in the dark kind of feel. But as a storyline, there really wasn't one. It was more like, let's do a bunch of crazy pictures and put them in a film to music.
You know, you just showed me something that I didn't really think about, because I thought the opposite, actually. Like, you actually have restraint to you artistically.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, in my head, I'm thinking, like, this guy literally, like, anything that pops in his head, he puts the paper and then he does, you know, which may be true, there's obviously stuff that doesn't go much further than that.
Yeah, there's times where it's a matter of integrity, it's a matter of respect. Honestly, I have so much respect for amazing filmmakers, for amazing authors, for amazing, I mean, all these different people. I don't want to disgrace the people that I fanboy out on by doing something cheesy and stupid, unless it's supposed to be cheesy and stupid.
Right.
I mean, the purpose of what you do and the meaning behind it is what matters to me, not the paycheck, not whether people like it. I mean,
well, good thing too, because that's what the world we live in. There's no paycheck.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty unlikable, to be honest with you. I mean, the majority of it. So I figured, well, I might as well stick to it, be abrasive and loud and obnoxious. And sometimes people get it, and sometimes they don't.
Right.
This goes back to the thing, like, people are shocked that I'm a parent. I mean, they find out I got a kid, and they're like, "You got a kid?" I'm like, "Yeah, actually, I got four." And they're like, "Oh shit, what?" You know, I've got two kids by blood, two kids by step. They're my kids. I love them, and I would do anything for them. Yeah, but I still keep them. Part of keep doing anything for them is keeping them separate from the rest of me,
right?
And my stupid, ridiculous life.
Yeah.
So, the film company is something I fell into. I was approached to do Ravenous, the soundtrack for Ravenous, which is a zombie movie starring Ian Cruz and Audrey Kelly.
You're the main course.
Yep, and. Over time, started talking to Lucifer, the writer, and he and I just got each other. Like, we just got each other. We're like,
oh, so he's a dick too?
Yeah, he's an asshole, and really dry, sarcastic, really weird. I mean, just sits back in a corner sometimes, and he'll just make this random one liner that everyone's like, did he just speak? What the? Oh my god, that was brilliant! It's those moments. We did a music video for Machinery Cell with him, and Audrey was in that. Nick Harrington was in that.
That's the one.
Ballad for Broken Teeth.
Yeah, yeah. I just watched that. Actually, it was after the passing, because, like,
yeah.
Well, I do kind of want to veer into that a little bit, because obviously we can will. Do this 25 times,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Easy. What's weird about, we talked about this at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all the people in this, like, circle, like, I mean, it's kind of a circle. Like,
we're a fucked up, dysfunctional family.
Some weird, there's, like, an orbit kind of happening, you know. I know a ton of these dudes, have met him before, maybe just once, like recently or whatever, but, like, I mean, I've known of you since I was, you know, 17 years old, and somehow I never
and you're
knew
not the
who
only
this
one.
I was. And, you know, of course, like, let me just tell you, like, my perception of how it all kind of unfolded. Like, obviously, something happens, you know, there's, like, some really, like, cryptic Facebook posts, mm-hmm. but, like, people are fucked up.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, trying to figure out, like, I don't know who I can ask, or, like, you know, obviously something's wrong, but maybe it's not, like, the worst thing, you know, what's up? And then as it started kind of unfolding, so, like, who's this guy to you?
Drummer?
Yeah.
It's my life. He's my conscience.
How about, like on planet Earth, though? Like,
yeah,
was
no,
just your friend? Like,
he was a person that...
I didn't mean for that to sound dicky, but,
no,
like,
I mean, it's true. I mean, he's a person that I met years and years and years ago. Who was into the same music I was. And, I mean, he was a guy I looked at and was like, damn, that kid can just fucking play. Like, just a phenomenal drummer, amazing musician. Watching him was just so much fun. And never really spent time getting to know him for a long time. Just, like, we would be in the same places. We'd know a lot of the same people. And it was like, hey, you know, he's real quiet. But when he talked, he was always, like, real. It was always something, like, important.
Yeah.
And... so we'd end up inevitably at some parties, like, it'd just be him and me sitting in a corner, because he is great at disappearing, and because I was like, fuck everything, and we'd start talking, and it would be these really long, drawn-out existential things, and he could just get into my soul, like, he could just get into what I really mean when I say or do certain things. He got it, and then I started hearing music he was making, and his music actually made me think. It made me feel things that, and express things that before, playing with Raj, playing with TJ, playing with Steve, it was rewarding and it was fulfilling, but it wasn't a release. It was mental foreplay. if you will.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
It was constantly being there ready to do something, but it was never like, I would freak out. I would freak out and lose my fucking mind and not remember shows. Entire chunks of time would be disappeared, and I'd be like covered in fucking blood from beating the shit out of myself and not know what happened, but it never felt like I was actually doing anything cathartic. It never felt like I was making a point or getting anything out there. It never felt real. And one day, Mabigelski got sick and couldn't come to, up to jam at my house. And drummer's there and he's playing bass. He goes,
I'll fucking play, man.
He was like, dude, you want to hear some Cordyceps stuff nobody's heard yet? I was like, fuck yeah, I do. He goes to his car and he comes in and he pops a CD in. And it's this instrumental. And I just started screaming at the top of my lungs. And he just looked at me and goes, you want to be my singer? I was like, you serious? I was thinking like one track. He goes, no, let's remake everything. Let's remake the band. I've got these like these six or seven tracks that I'm working on, and there's three or four more. And that became Against Our Better Judgment. That we created an album and put it out. And we were like, man, nobody's going to. We called it vomit metal. I mean, nobody's going to like this. And we did a fucking a CD release, and Haven Effect played, and people came up. MC Entity was there, and Prophecy Aaron Monk, we did it. Like, just a bunch of friends having a barbecue, and gave out 125 CDs or some shit like that. And we're like, we got like 10 left. Maybe we should book a show. Like, let's see what happens.
Right.
Booked a show, more CDs. Got another show, more CDs. Another show, another show. Oh, shit, we're going to play in fucking Denver in front of a bunch of people at Ink Live Tour? Fuck yeah. Hey, Kenny, come spin fire while we do this. Oh, we're playing this show with Intertwined. Oh, we're playing this show with Murder Cafe. And then we get the call. You want to open for Chimera?
What?
We're like, holy shit. You're full of shit. That's exactly what I said. I was like, Dave, you're full of shit. He goes, no, I'm dead serious. You want to open for Chimera? I was like, have you heard us? He goes, I don't know. Somebody has, because it's the Unearthed Chimera tour, and they asked if you guys want to open it.
Wow. That's and cool. They well, now, called, what time frame is this?
This like is 08? December of 2010.
Okay.
It was December of 10. And I told drummer, and I'll never forget the look on his face, where he just went, you know, a year ago, when we were talking about recording an album, weren't we pretty much just drinking a lot and thinking this might be kind of fun to do for us? I said, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. He goes, what the fuck happened? I don't know. And it was the first album I'd released on Prophecy Records in years, and we discussed it, and he became a partner. And at the time, MC Entity was another partner, and we started rebuilding at that point. Like, when that came through, and I mean, there was a lot of people involved, and a lot of our friends came, and they're like, God, we didn't even know you guys were really doing anything. This is cool. And we started making shirts and buttons and became a real quote-unquote band. And the biggest thing, people show up, two-piece metal band, what the fuck? Where's your drummer? Where's your bass player? It's in our heads. You know? It's in our heads. Like, we'll go up there. And I actually had a guy ask us, you know, when we were getting ready to book the run down to Texas, like, how does a two-piece metal band work? I was like, well, we walk on stage and we plug in this thing out of our suitcase and then we rock the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of became our motto. Because right after that, drummer looked over and said, yeah, dude, just be careful with your face. I mean, and the guy was like, yeah, I will be. Like, I mean, that was like a really good warning to him. And we just, it became like a whole meaning to us. Like,
be careful with your face.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, my first text ever from drummer was Halloween in 08. I get this fucking random-ass text message from this number I don't recognize at fucking, like, 1:45 in the morning that is, if I was really fat and someone saw me naked, I'd be really pissed off. Not because they saw me naked, but because they could see my penis and I can't. I waited a full 12 hours before I finally said, who the fuck is this? Who just texted me this? Oh, it's drummer, man. Oh, okay. And that was kind of our thing. It was just random one-liners.
Meanwhile, in his head, no time had gone by at all. Like, he just went on with his day.
Well, what it was...
You're sitting in your room going, like, what the fuck is
that? I was really... Like, what it was, come to find out, he was wearing a fat suit at a Halloween party. And he went to take a leak, and he was like, how do fat people do this? Like, how? But, you know, that's... And that kind of set the tone for our... I mean, most of our friendship was ridiculous one-liners and making fun of each other. And then you bring Opie into that mix. You bring, you know, Rocco for a while, Nick.
Dude, like, okay, the the little bit that I got was the time that I went to, it was at the metal show, and it was like Opie, Matt himself, and a couple other guys, I don't know who they were. And I mean, it's just a different level of, like, I don't even know what anybody's talking about, but it's funny. Like I'm somehow in the same room, but I'm completely feeling left out at the same time. You know,
welcome to our lives.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like that feeling of being left out right there is what makes me like envious of that.
Yeah.
That train of thought.
90% of our conversations are inside jokes.
Yeah.
Like you see a lot. You watch online things. We say gross.
Yeah.
Like that's just a word to people. There's a story behind that shit to us. Like, when I say gross, people are like, oh, dude, oh, and they, like, almost want to throw up because they think about the first time that was said in a public, or, like, whenever we play poker, it has to be said. At some point, something has to almost be broken, and somebody has to scream, that's why we can't have nice things.
I'm with you.
Like, that shit, and it you become, you get used to it, you fall into it, you know. Drummer, to me, is the only friend I've ever had who was a, not only okay with me being me, but when I wasn't being me, would be like, poke, 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 until I was. If I was keeping my mouth shut at a time that it was inappropriate, or I was too scared to try something, or I was, I mean, I do not deal well with heartbreak. I don't. It's something that I
well, that is one thing that strikes me about you, like how emotional a guy you are. Like, I mean, when we first started really actually threatening about this podcast was at the memorial.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you held it together
pretty well.
The most part.
Yeah.
But, like, I could tell that, like, okay, like, for instance, like, what happened today? Like, if something like that would happen at that show, you would have been down for the count right there.
Well, too. And actually, I did sneak off and cry a few times at that show. I snuck off out of respect for the people who were trying to enjoy themselves. Mad proud of Vogel and doing something. I didn't want him to think I was upset over something bad. I just missed my friend. And the fact that I'm scared of Danny, and she would kick the fuck out of me if she saw me crying. I mean, that girl throws a left hook. She split my lip on numerous occasions, and I really didn't want to upset her and make her mad at me and be like, you fucking pussy, and kick the shit out of me.
So, this is a really broad question, and I kind of know the answer, because I'm basing the question on your, you know, your posts and stuff like that, but like what's here now? Like, what's left?
Everything's changed. My whole existence has changed. If it weren't for Jamie, my ex, being here, I would have joined him instantly. I would have.
What do you mean joined him?
I would have killed myself.
Oh, he killed himself?
It was an accidental death, is how we're calling him. But yeah, I didn't know.
Well, that's the thing. I was like, who are you supposed to ask? Hey, what happened? That we're here for? Yeah. What happened? You know, like.
And it's one of the things. Like, there's a million questions and things, and I don't want to go into details out of respect for the family. But yes, he did shoot himself. He was not a suicidal person. It was not. In fact, he was getting me through. I am a suicidal person. I am the person who falls into despair, and he was getting me through. And I would have. There's no question in my mind that if it weren't for people like Jeremiah Campbell and Noah Sullins and T.J. Hoffman but mostly Jamie Beatty saved my life. And there's no question. She was here, and this is a girl who I've loved for a very long time, who we've not been together for a very long time, and she happened to be staying here because of circumstances in her life, and for whatever reason, she was here, and she was here to help me through that, and I can never pay her enough. I'll never be whole again, but I'm learning to cope, and a lot of that is because of her continuing to push me and tell me, you got to do this, you got to do this for the kids, you got to do this for your friends, you got to do this out of respect.
Okay,
for
so respectfully,
yeah.
My brain kicks in on stuff like this, because it's just like, for one thing, it's not anything I've ever even close to dealt with.
Yeah,
I haven't lost anyone, dude.
I've lost anyone. So many. It's ridiculous, but this is the closest I've ever been to anybody. I mean,
now you say you're dealing with it, and you seem
it's closer than if my parents had died.
Right.
I'm closer to him than I am my parents.
Okay.
And
I mean, you're dealing with it pretty decent now. Like, have you had?
I cry every day.
Well, I know, but have you had, like, real scary days since or anything like that?
Couple. I ain't gonna lie. I mean, yeah, there's been a couple.
What do you think he would think about that?
He would kick the shit out of me. I mean, he would.
Is that what keeps you from...
That's a big part of it. I go down and I sit at his drum set, and I think. I mean, I do a lot. Jamie doesn't know. A lot of times when I'm texting her, it's just me reaching out.
She probably does.
She may. I mean,
We're not as crafty as we think.
I'm a dipshit, and I fuck up things a lot, and she's always deserved way better than me, and yet she still seems to tolerate me. And a lot of people, I say that about Danny. I could say that about. I mean, there's a lot of things. When I fail in spectacular finish. I may fuck up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when I fuck up, I try and fix it. I try and look at what did I do wrong? What am I doing wrong? What can I change? What can I fix? And you said earlier, like, why do you do all these things? Honestly, if I didn't, I'd go insane. Because I have to keep my mind going. If I stop and
think, are you like a idle hands type of dude?
Second that I don't have something to do, I start thinking, what can I do? And it almost always goes destructive. And I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy who, out of boredom or a sense of needing to feel, does something stupid. I was a bit of a cutter at times in my life. I've never hidden the fact that I've been suicidal at times. I was very into various narcotics and supplements for a long period. I've been sober for a long time. But there are times still to this day. I mean, they say, always recovering. There are times where I'm like, oh my God, I would do anything to just be not here. To not think. To not feel. And it gets really rough. And it does get hard. And
What are you looking forward to? Like, because, I mean, I assume that...
See, now that's a hard question. Because that's just it. Like, right now, I have a really hard time looking forward to anything. I have a really hard time looking forward to
that. Well, maybe that's why I ask you this, because it seems like recently is the first, like, kind of, like the Terminator, you know, like the little red spark in his eyes, like, finally starting to come back. Because you've been pretty radio silent for a while.
I've kept it quiet. I don't really know what to say. And every time I get online, people want to know how I'm doing. They want to... I go to the store, people want to hug me.
Can't you throw, like, the one flare up that's, like, you know, so everybody knows, you know what I mean? Like before you start like actually trying to do work, you're like, you know, like I'm alive. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, for now. And that's kind of what I tried doing, and unfortunately, that's just not good enough. I mean,
well, because everybody knows it's more than that. You know?
And that's a big thing.
And again, this is a little bit of why I wanted to talk about this, because I feel like somebody like you, like you're never ever going to unravel the whole thing. Yeah,
I'm never going to get my head around it. I'm never going to understand it. I'm never going to feel whole. But you know what? I got some amazing fucking people in my life.
And, well, that's what it made my heart feel nice, like, when to be at the club that night.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? Like, I think I might have said this to you that night, too. Maybe not, but maybe I just thought it in my head. But when I was a kid, like, I used to think about, like, what if...
If I died, who would come?
I think it was because of the movie My Girl.
Oh, yeah. If I died, who would come to the funeral?
Who would be there? And the thing is that you think when you're a kid that you get to do the Daffy Duck thing where you, like, float over your own funeral and see who's around and stuff like that. You don't get to do that. And, Well, I mean...
Yeah, who knows?
Whatever.
Who knows?
Open interpretation. But, like, to see that, and, like, I mean, there was a fuckload of people. Like, I'm going to imagine that there was more people at that than will ever be at mine.
Yeah.
I mean, at least you can say equal. That's good.
You know, I don't know that, actually. I don't know that. The thing is that Drummer... I mean it when I say he was my conscience. Drummer was the best of all of us. Drummer and Danny were the ideal... They're who everybody references when they're talking about true romance, like true love. That's who you reference. When you talk about integrity and honesty and just an ear and a person to lean on, that's Drummer. That's who he is and who he always will be, and I'll never be that. I may be the guy that can get your shit and figure things out and have random conversations in the night, and I can listen and I can figure shit out, but I'm not the guy... I'm not the first on anybody's list of calls when something bad happens or when they need help.
Now, okay, he's on everybody's first. Let me go into that. Like, is that something that you maybe now like aspire to at all, or are you just going to leave it at what it is? You know, and I'm not saying you should.
No, I mean, I've always kind of aspired to that. I mean, he was in many ways. He's, you know, he was kind of my Captain America. You know, it's the person you want to be. You want to be the epitome of something. He was the epitome of humanity. True humanity. Complete acceptance, complete feeling, but understanding at the same time. I mean, just there wasn't a thing that was put in front of me you couldn't understand.
Okay, like, if you've heard one of these shows, you know, like, I don't think I'm anything as far as like this stuff goes, but much to, you know, some people I know is like chagrin or whatever, mm-hmm. it just annoys them, you know, especially when you talk about like how this thing started and like what it's become now. Like, I want to be a positive person.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not a positive person, but like whatever I bring to you that's not like a face to face, like you, like say you and I are just drinking and we're like, oh, life sucks, but you know, but like if somebody's gonna fucking take a look at this, you know, I want them to come away with something that's like, you know, makes them feel, even if it just feels better about themselves because I look like a piece of shit or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I want to be
positive. You want to give like some people, you know, some empowerment. You want to give them the ability to laugh at yourself in the worst of situations.
Well, and like what I was trying to tell my uncle, like, fucking one of the funniest guys I know, and I want badly for him to do this show, but he won't because he's Mr. Private Guy, you know, which is fine.
Yeah.
But like, he's like, why do you do it? And I'm like, there's something to be said about like living like completely out there.
Yeah.
You know, like my pictures of me and Kim Jong Fat, like, I'm not proud of the fact that I look exactly like him, but it's like, eh, fuck it, you know, might as well try to get a laugh out of a couple people, you know? And, you know, the stories that I've told on here and, like, you know, this kind of thing, it's like, it's kind of like a relief to just have it out there.
Yeah.
And if anybody can grab anything like, oh shit, I'm not going to do that, or man, that was fucked up, or, you know, whatever, like, that's all I really want to do with this. But, like, for you, like, you say you're never going to be whole again, but, like, I almost feel like, maybe this is stupid, but, like, you might be, like, of course, you know, he's not here, but, mm-hmm. like, all this stuff that you, like, glean from him,
we'll stay, I mean,
that's kind of like a big suture, like, you know.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm grateful for every moment. Some of his best friends from being in child said, you know, we're really grateful that he had you and you had him and you guys spent so much time together and made this amazing music that was drummer, that was him in the last couple of years. I mean, I got at least one more, possibly two more albums worth of material that I'm trying to put together.
How long before the hologram?
You know, I don't know. I wonder. You know, I mean, that's just it. Like, I mean, Joe, Opie, me, we really want to get that out. We really do. We really want to make it happen. We're going to remaster Cordyceps. I've released a couple of the tracks that people didn't realize he'd done at the funeral. I played a Led Zeppelin track that he kind of just did, like, for the Your Ears Only thing. I think maybe 3-4 people had heard that.
Well, that's what the Nine Inch Nails thing was, too, right?
Yeah, we did that just for fun. I mean, that was actually an homage from him to Danny and me to Jamie. It was our... I mean, people laugh about it because we're a metal band. I mean, the song... There are songs. I mean, Ballad of Broken Teeth is actually kind of a commitment to a true story, and it's kind of a love song.
I got that. There's some other things.
I mean, there's other stories that are love stories that we've got in there. There's that people don't realize. Like, I'm writing about real stuff. He's writing about real stuff.
Let me ask you this. You said you weren't really sure about like what, you know, the focus is going to be, or like what you want to do
mm-hmm.
coming up. Like I said, you know, the eye is starting to turn back on, you know, coming way up again.
Yeah.
What if you just made it like what you just said about his music and all the stuff that's coming up? Like, obviously you don't want to, you know, pound it all out.
Right, yeah, I'm not going to rush it, but I mean, yeah, that's a goal. That's something I don't know how or when. I mean, if you talk about like the record label, we've got albums from MC Entity, Dead Lotus Society, MC Nikki, hopefully, Killswitch Kilo and Zero One are both working on stuff, so I'm sure there's going to be more. Synthetic Corporation, Papa Cap's got an EP, he wants to get a Drop Top, Lincoln's got an album that's like almost done. I mean, we've got a lot there, and I'm focused on those things. I'm focused on the fact that Ravenous is in color correction, it's in sound editing now, and we've decided on a path for that. Lucifer is working on two other films. I've got two scripts that I've got in my head, one of which I'm kind of putting into pre-production. The free stuff I'm already doing and getting some casting ideas together. With my photography, I've got literally hundreds of ideas.
Okay, now they can't see what that face you just made, but like you had two hands, like not like your whole head in your hands type thing, but you're
digging at my brain.
Four fingers touch your forehead, and you're just shaking your head at your computer. Like, this is what I'm worried about with you. Like, and this is not worried. I'm not, you know.
No, it's like it's being that scattered, not being able to focus. I get that a lot.
Well, what I worry about is like, you know, not worry, but what I'm thinking in my head is like, you know, I feel like right now you're like one of those wind chimes. It's like a prism type of thing, you know, where it's got all the different lights going around, And, like, if you just, like, took the time to, like, just set that once and just, you know.
It'd be like fucking laser beam.
And it'd be fucking killer stuff.
Problem is if I become a laser beam, once I meet that goal, nothing else is moving. My brain goes quiet. And if my brain goes quiet...
You have 43 admins.
Yeah.
Meaning at least 43 different projects in different areas.
And like it takes that many to... I mean, taking on the editing there, the stories that I write, the interviews that I do, the films that I have yet to put to paper, the short stories that I haven't published yet, the novel I've been working on for 3 years about the experience I had with, well, it's not really a novel, it's a true story, but
that's gonna be fucking great.
You know, the experience I had with my daughter and being a parent and being me, you know, being this tattooed ugly freak who screams, and I'm the antithesis of what most people think of as a responsible parent, and yet those things, if I don't think about all of them and don't work on all of them, I mean, my workstation, like, you laugh, like, right now, so everybody knows, we're sitting at my dining room table, and I do have one laptop up here, and I put my laptop up here because my daughter likes to sneak in the kitchen when I'm not paying attention, and I did actually have my office up here, and because of having the kids around and family and stuff, I moved my office to downstairs. Normally, I have two, sometimes three or four computers running at once. I have both phones going. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually, this whole time, like, you keep touching your phone. I've been ignoring mine. I've missed, there's 16 text messages.
Jesus.
I mean,
well, we've gone plenty for this. I just, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't worry about time. It's just, it's these are the things I do. I am multitasking. I mean, like,
you're basically saying that, like, not, you know, luckily you're creative to,
if I
to
don't
like
balance all, keep all these balls in the air and keep everything kind of juggling like some kind of a messed up seal, if I don't do that, I notice how quiet it is in my head.
You're a shark.
Yeah, I mean, I have like to keep moving. I have to keep going. When I'm on the phone, I pace. I mean, you can see the marks on the floor where I walk. And I do those things, and I'm always thinking of three or four different lines of thought. I mean, you ever drive somewhere? And then you're driving, and then suddenly you realize and go, whoa, I don't remember, like, the last 35 miles.
Yeah.
That's how I think sometimes. Like, I will literally look down and realize I just did a demographics report.
No, you are a shark. Because did you know that, like, since they can't stop moving, mm-hmm. they sleep their brain in, like, quadrants?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you just said.
Yeah. I mean, I think about too many different things at once. And I'll be, you know, taking care of my daughter and making dinner or packing lunches while I'm preparing my itinerary for the day, while planning a photo shoot, while remembering all the people I got to call, while I'm like, oh, crap. It all works. And I've never been able to understand it. I don't understand it. But when Drummer died, when I got the call, first thought it was a joke, and then... And when it sunk in, and I realized, when Danny called, and Danny didn't sound like Danny, I didn't even recognize her, and she told me it was real, I've always had a soundtrack in my head. I hear music all the time.
It just stopped?
And it hasn't come back. My head is quiet, and it's disconcerting in ways I can't even describe, and... Like, I sit down now and I try and play drums and I feel like a fucking 4-year-old. Like, I can't even play. And I grab the guitar down and I'm like, oh, I know this song and I know the chords and I know what to do, but I can't do it. I haven't been able to sing. I mean, I sang, you saw me at Intertwine. I mean, like, singing my material, singing anything that's ours, going, I can't even go to karaoke. Like, I can't do it. I don't hear music.
No disrespect, but what? There's something in your way right now. And it's not just him. Like, what?
There's a lot going in my way. There's a lot. I mean, realizing that I fucked up the best relationship I've ever had with Jamie. I mean, I fucked that up, and I don't think I'll ever get that back. I don't. I mean, she's. There are times where I think she still loves me enough, but that's not enough, and that hurts. Knowing that. A couple of the friends that I really do count on are just as broken as I am right now, and that I can't lean on them. I went through some shit with my mom.
Not even, like, together? Like,
they can't...
It's just fucked up.
They can't process. I mean, I've got a couple friends who are like, man, I just can't be around you, because being around you, just, I can feel you. It hurts. It's painful being in the room with you, and that's hard for them. They call, they check, you know.
That's kind of... I don't know what I feel about that. I understand.
At times, I think it's like, man, that seems so selfish. But at the same time, like,
not selfish, but I mean, I understand what they're saying. But that's kind of like, that's kind of jacked to be like, hey, you're putting off a vibe I can't be around. It's like, well, what do you want from me, man? Like,
yeah, and that's just it. Like, I can't help it. But at the same time, like, I understand that. And it's hard for people to spend time around me. Like, I mean, some of my best friends are like, dude. Yeah, I mean, they're like, man, I can only take you in doses. And because you are so intense, you make me tired. And it is, you know, I've talked about going back to therapy. I've talked about, I don't have people to talk to. I talked to James.
That's why I'm here, brother.
No, I know.
Well, that's kind of what I love about this, too, because we've only talked a couple times before this, and, like, I mean, me, like, I have no, like, yeah, you're manic and you're fast and all that kind of stuff, but, like, now we're in the pocket, I'm, like, I have no fear about any of this conversation anymore.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like, I don't know you.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't have any, like, preconceived, like, why you're acting like this, or, like, and, maybe there are people that will hear this that will, and they'll be like, ah, he's just being a whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's always been like that. I don't know that.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're telling me how you are, but, like, I mean, I know what I say to people when they ask about me. And it's not exactly a representation. You know?
I believe I'm an open book. Like, I have people all the time like, you're so mysterious. You're so, I don't know. It's like, shut up. I'm an open fucking book. I may not be easy to read. It may be like
I'm in Arabic English. Braille.
Yeah, but I really am. Like, I am one of those people.
How many times am I going to say Braille during the show? I just realized that was on mic. What an ass.
That's all right. You're loud. All right.
Okay. What do you say?
It's because my eyes are so huge that you're kind of scared of making the blind jokes. It just automatically pops out there.
I don't like how you took vision. Like, I work in an eye clinic, and you took vision on yourself. You're like, no, I'm going to go ahead and own that.
Yeah.
I don't like how you do that.
Sorry. That's my job. No, I mean, but like, you know, there are parts of me that.
But don't you feel like calling those people and be like, look, you know, like, or not? I mean, I'm sure you handle it how you handle it, but like, and I'm not calling anybody out. I'm just making observations and asking questions. That's all. Yeah. Isn't there a part of you that's like, please?
Oh, constantly.
You know, like
constantly.
I can't really help this right
you
now.
You know,
like,
but at the same time, there are those people that I didn't know. David Letchheim, with Psychocosm, Seeds of Revolution, Punk of Punk's Design. I mean, the guy has been there for me in ways that. We were not great friends until very recently. I mean, we've known each other a long time, but he's been there and just let me damn near self-destruct and kind of just let me bitch, which at times
is
just
what
I need.
Well, you'd have to do that with you because you don't seem like the kind of guy that, like, let's just say that, like, you know, nothing else was going on and I'm like, let's go downtown or a sports bar or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we started drinking and then you just started spiraling. Like, I gotta watch you dive, because like
you're not gonna stop it.
Yeah, you can't bring it back.
No, you're not gonna leash me in. And actually, the irony there is, and that's what I mean is like I gotta really I like to fight. I do. I like to fight. I don't get in a lot of fights, but I like to fight.
I'm knocking through that wall right now.
That's just it. I can run through a wall. I can run through a door. I can do those things. In fact, I'll show you I got doors and walls I've run through that are downstairs that I've saved over the years. There's pictures online of me doing shit like that. I just and I got in a really bad fight with a roommate once, and for the first time ever, without a bunch of guys jumping on top of me and like kind of beat the piss out of me, because I lose a lot of fights, is what it amounts to. There are certain people I've discovered that can stop me. Drummer was one.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, don't you fucking do it, and I'd stop. It's just instant switch. Jamie put a hand on me one night and was like, God, you're gonna kill our roommate. She's like, you don't kill him, baby, don't kill him. And I stopped and went back inside, started making a sandwich. It was like most natural thing in the world to me. It just, okay, cool, sorry. You know, I beat the fuck out of that guy. I still kind of feel bad. I mean, he had it coming, but I fucked him up pretty good, and I didn't have a mark on me, nothing. You know, situations that the way they are, I've hurt people inadvertently as of late, and it's this giant balance of karma. I had somebody who's very close to me actually make the comment, like, there are times with the way you're acting, it's embarrassing that this is over Drummer, because he would kick the fuck out of you for acting like this.
Yeah, we mentioned that earlier, but like,
and that's for me, that's to be told I'm an embarrassment. That's where I lie. Is I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the embarrassment. I don't want to be. I mean,
now, okay,
I've been labeled
a
jackass, a liar, a million different horrible things, but. That's just it. Is I don't want to call these people who are going through their own shit and make their situation worse because that makes me the bad guy.
Well, let me throw something out there. Like, I've talked to a couple different people about, like, the image that they make for themselves that they have to live up to. Like, I was on the podcast with the, you know, Rachel, she's the bartender at the,
yeah.
You know her, okay.
Yeah.
We talked about, it might not have been on the podcast, but whatever. I don't think she would care that I said this, but, like, I used to kind of get at her and be like, you know, all you're doing right now is trying to live up to this, like, party monster that you have become. You know, like, everybody expects you to be, you know, all dressed up with your boobs out and, you know, wasted.
Happy, fun, hot girl, which is what most bartenders go through.
Now, you know, I kind of called her out for, like, trying to live up to that, but, like, I'm asking you, like, you really do, like, deify this guy, like, for yourself. Like, isn't that a little bit much, though? Like,
I deify OP to an extent.
Just because he's, like, beautiful, I mean...
Well, it's not even that. I mean, he is a gorgeous ginger fuck, isn't he? But, no, what it is, he has this air of, oh, you don't like me? Cool. I'm going to keep pissing you off then. But
yeah,
then
but
can turn
know,
around
really
and be...
I don't really know if that's, like, a talent,
yeah,
is
but,
it?
It's not even... It's
a talent,
Obi. It's inherently who he is. And yet, at the same time, he can be the most calming, understanding, amazing human being. In the next second.
Yeah.
You know, TJ is just a great human. Ancient Myth pisses me off more than almost anybody I know. And there's nobody on this planet that can put me in my place faster. And just fucking nail me. And we will be at each other and just hate each other. And then it's, love you, bro, want to go to breakfast?
Right.
You know, that I deify the people that I respect, and it's not... I don't get starstruck.
But are you saying you're not that for anybody else?
I don't think so.
Which is weird because, like, to me it's weird, but again, because I don't really know you, but, like, I've been talking about...
I mean, God, I hope people don't want to be like me because I'm nuts. I mean,
like you, but, like, they see you and they see something that they don't have. You know, like when they talk about, like Adam Carolla or Joe Rogan or, like, these people like Dana White from the UFC, like, these guys that are just, like, robots that, like, they're building something... And they never stop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how I feel about you. Like, I don't know that I necessarily, like, look up to you, but I have respect for what you're doing, and especially in the face of how this is how you have to operate as a human being, you know? Because it's one thing to be just you know, doing stuff, and you're like, well, why do you do it? And they're like, I don't know, man, it's just a thing I have. You're like, if I don't, you know, I die. I turn upside down, and I float to the top.
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
I just think it's weird that, like, this is a fucked up question, but, like, do you have any, like, self-respect? And, like, that's a fucked up question,
no,
but
okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
no, I get what you're saying. Like, do I have self-respect? God, my daughter has the best taste in movies. love you. I do have self-respect. I have...
Maybe not self-respect, even.
I don't have a sense of self... value or worth,
yeah, worth. Yeah,
that a lot of people I think expect that I would. I have not succeeded at anything in my life ever. Not actually succeeded. I've never actually completed something or gone through something that I could say I'm done, I'm proud, I completed this and it was me. It's always I was part of something that may have been completed or I was part of something that went huge. It's never been me.
That's how I am too. Like
yeah.
I never started anything of my own. Like you were saying, you know, drone, worker bee.
Yeah.
Well, it's just because of my upbringing pretty much. You know, my dad's, you know,
people are trained
just
that
a
way,
worker,
you know?
You know, my mom, same thing. And I never, like, people always ask me, like, oh, don't you want to live somewhere? Like I was born in Glenwood.
Yeah.
Like, don't you ever want to? I'm like, no, like... Like, do you know how amazing it is to go on vacation? Like, vacation's the shit. Movie's on. But, like, you know, that's why I started doing this, because it's the first thing that I haven't tried to, like, you know, latch my wagon to, like, meaning, like, you know, other musicians, bands, you know, Rob, all that other stuff. Like, I was always like, yeah, big fucking cheerleader, but I'm not part of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but, like, for
you're
you, like...
You're a groupie.
Yeah. And I put out easily, too.
Yeah, that's good to know. That's good to know. I need to make sure I got your number.
Jesus.
No, I mean, I get that, and that's just it. My thing is, I'm really good at stirring up shit. I'm not so good at smooth.
Can you ever
out
turn that down a tiny bit?
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I asked her to turn that. She did. She pretends she's deaf.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She, I saw you. Okay. See, I'm a moron.
We do actually. She was born hard of hearing, but she's gotten through most of it. Right. But she still does the whole, I'm going to crank the TV because I think I can get away with it. She's just showing off because we're not paying attention to her.
Right.
So what happens?
Well, we've gone pretty good here, yeah. So let's kind of wrap it up. But, like, yeah. I mean, is that anything that's ever going to turn around for you, you think? I mean, like.
Fuck if I know. I mean, I've never been the guy. Like, I'm aging, getting older doesn't scare me.
Right.
Death doesn't scare me. Getting to a point where I can't continue to stir shit up and be this odd, fucked up juggernaut, that is starting to, I can see that on the distance going.
But don't you know that, like, legacy is part of that too?
Yeah, my legacy, the legacy I want to leave, is that my kids, when they get asked about me in 20, 25 years, when they're done with the whole "I hate Dad, he's a prick," when they get past that point, they go, "You know what? I'm pretty proud of my dad.
Yeah.
I'm proud he's my dad. My dad taught me some really cool things, or he showed me some stuff that nobody else's dad I know did that. You know, going to shows, being part of movies, going to film premieres, going to these events, meeting celebrities and not realizing they're celebrities and not having any understanding. It's like, oh, that's just one of Dad's friends who came over to hang out for a few days. Like they don't register that.
Right.
You know, in a few years here, my stepson is gonna look at this thing that he just got from a friend, a guy I'm lucky to call my friend, who stayed with us for a week or so. And he's going to look at that and go, holy shit, that dude's fucking famous.
Right.
Like, I bet that's worth money. Like, and it's this long.
And then he's going to go sell it.
And he may, you know. And part of me hopes he does, so he regrets it forever. And part of me hopes he holds on to that. And his kids look at it and go, holy shit, Dad knew some cool fucking people.
Right.
And I mean, because, and it's just this really heartfelt, nice note to him. He's 11. And I want him to go, that never would have happened if it weren't for my dad. And that's what I want. And I want that, I mean, I want that for everybody. I want anybody who's around me to go, man, I wouldn't have life the way I have it, for better or for worse, if you weren't in it.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I don't want to be important. I want to be the person that people go, huh. Well, that's different.
Let me wrap this up with one. I'm gonna challenge you a little bit here.
Okay.
I don't like the fact that you got people that are telling you that you can't, like, they can't be around you because of what's going on and all that kind of stuff. Like, that bothers me somehow. I don't really know how, but it bugs me. I want you to think a lot about. This is so stupid, me pontificating. Where's my? I need a Pope hat.
You can stand on the bar if you want.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Pants? No. All right.
No, optional.
All right. I feel like you have like a hole, like a space because of your buddy, right? But I think that you probably pulled way more from him that stuck. That, you know, just because you don't get to pull from him in real life, like in person, like, it's still in your head.
It is.
And like, that's pretty strong stuff if you're saying that this guy was like your, like, he fixed
he's
you.
He's
like
a lot the
of ways,
opposite
like,
of me in many ways. I mean,
well, fair enough, but like, he you have all that in you now. You know what I mean?
And it's, like, it's harnessing it. It's finding out how to tap into it and work through it. And that's been something that I've been trying for a very long time. And every time I think I'm starting to get there, I do something stupid. Like,
it's too early though, man.
It is. It's still very fresh. It's only been 3 months.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, it's
in
literally
6 months,
not even
you're
going to
be like, you're gonna be like, God damn, that Trevante is smart.
And it's still like recently, like, I start feeling like, okay, I've got a grasp, and then I say something stupid and you know, piss off people I care about.
No,
but I genuinely
I've been
care
going
about.
I've been going through that a lot.
You know, or...
And I think that's just going to happen. As long as you, like, realize and, like, you don't just plow through life fucking everybody over.
My big thing right now is I don't have a pause button
right
for my mouth. Like, I'm actually saying shit without thinking of the repercussions. And I can do that with people. The scary part is I've done it a couple times with my kids, not realizing that they're going to hear this phrase, and this phrase, not the conversation. And
they're not going to have Dad in context.
Yeah, and that's the part of drummer was a very good filter for me. Like, when we went to Austin, he actually said, all right, here's the deal. We're going to go here, and we're going to drink like madmen, run around like crazy, just like when we were in Vegas. We're going to play some shows. We're going to be hanging out with Opie, so you know things are going to get stupid. I need you to shut the fuck up for the next 3 days. I said, okay, I can do that. And that's exactly what I did. And now...
Can't you do that for yourself, though, now, though?
Trying to. It's the...
Well, no, that's...
Having a reminder.
That's different, though, because like... That's like if you do go to therapy, that's like thought stopping. Yeah. That's like we were saying, like, you know, man, I don't know what you were into, but like, you know, you're talking about drugs and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, all
like
of it.
That thing that, okay.
Everything. Well,
that guy that's telling you, like, hey, let's go do that, like, you're still going, like,
Yeah.
Like, you're stopping yourself.
It's creating a reminder. It's the creating same that thing, yeah. He was very good. I mean, this is one of those things, like, hey, if you fuck up, I'm going to punch you. At the same time, when drummer's really happy, it was, I'm going to punch you. He knocked me the fuck out at his wedding. Like, looked at somebody and goes, should I? And then went, sure. And he ran across the bar and knocked me on my ass. I mean, fucking just clocked the piss out of me. And I was like, what the fuck did I do? He goes, dude, I'm just ecstatically happy. I was like, okay.
What was the one where he said, like, he did that same thing to you and then he's like, I expect it back later. Like,
that was exactly that night. He was like, dude, I do expect it back later. I was like, okay. And I clocked him right there. And he was not expecting it right then. And everybody's like, oh my God, he hit the groom. And everybody's like, woo! You know, it was awesome. Like, when we were at his wake, I jumped up on the bar, and everybody's like, that's normal. Like, right. That's expected of me. Keeping quiet, doing those, I mean, I don't have a character. I don't have a persona. I'm me. I keep my private life private, my public life public, and I try to keep them separate.
You know what? When somebody like you cries... They might think that that's the real you and that the rest of it's persona. Yep. Maybe that's what you're running into.
I don't know
if you knew this, but I'm not a doctor. Yeah. But, you know, some time goes by, like, you're going to get better at this.
Yeah.
And, like, fact is, like, you have to get better at this.
No, I do. I got the kids. I got people that count on me. I believe me.
Well, plus, you know, I got to get this Indiegogo thing, so, you know, I'm counting on you, too.
Oh, okay. That's good. That's good to know.
Well, hey, I think we went long enough. We should do it again for sure, though. Like, this is way worth my drive. Yeah. So,
I can go on for hours. Like, literally. I can do
if
whatever.
I didn't have somewhere to be, I would just stay here and do it for two hours more.
Yeah.
But,
I
think it's cool that you're able to figure out what, like, how you work as a person, and that's why you do all this stuff. Because that was my main thing. I was like, why the fuck do you bother with all this? You know, like,
I think that's everybody. I don't get it.
I don't want to do mine. Yeah. Like, all I want to do is record it and then have somebody else figure out the rest of it. I don't want to promote it or try to please listen to it, please. Yeah. Here's an Apple gift card,
which is
card,
funny, because you're actually really good at it. You are really good at what
you
do.
You know how I learned, because I didn't have Facebook or anything like that before this. I learned it by doing it for work. I went through, like, the small business manuals for it. Like, that's the only thing I know about Facebook.
Yeah. Honestly, Rob's really good at it. Oh, she's hot. I have really hot friends.
You really do, and that's another podcast for sure. Dude, I'm actually going to meet your partner in Inspired.
Okay,
what is that?
Here's the idea. She's the editor. She's the editor-in-chief. I'm actually the assistant editor. She's my boss.
Okay.
Here's the thing. To give you an idea of what my life is like, Candy's has met me, and she doesn't know it. She shook my hand. She met me at a show. She remembers Francesca. She remembers Aeon. She remembers she doesn't remember me.
Huh. And you guys haven't met since then?
Talking to Paul. I have not been in the same room with her.
Huh. Well, I'm looking forward to since talking to her. I'll report back.
She's
for sure.
Fucking amazing. Like, she is really a badass.
Right,
badass chick. Hey. I want to show you an actual Facebook, though. So pack your shit up, and I'm going to show you what actual
All right, man.
Facebook is.
I appreciate this, brother.
Yeah.